Thanks, everybody. My name's Ken, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's really an honor to be here and to share with you guys. And I'm not a speaker, and I don't pretend to be one, but I have a story, and it's my story. And I used to say I had several stories, and I know everybody says they only have one story. But I really only have one. It just changed many times because I've been in and out of these rooms. Myself, I really don't know where to start. I know I drank too much, and that's why I'm an alcoholic. I know that my alcoholism really didn't start until I was in the Navy, and it really started in Hawaii many years ago. But, to go backwards a little bit, I was raised in an alcoholic family, and my parents took us from the city when I was about 3 years old to the country and built a basement, and they were going to put a house on top, which never happened. And, they always had money for booze, but not for us. I never went to a dentist unless there was my tooth was broken or there was whatever. Never seen doctors. I went to school with hand-me-down clothes and holes in my shoes, and I was always trying to get away from there. I was always over at my friend's house or something. And one day my friend said, "Why don't you ever have us over to your house?" I was afraid. I didn't know what would be going on in my house when I got there. So that's kind of like where I came from. And when I graduated from high school, I moved to about 40 miles away to stay with my grandmother, and I was out of school for about, I don't know, a couple of months before I got my first draft notice. And then I threw that one away. So then I got another draft notice, and I threw it away. I thought, I'm not ready to go anywhere. I just got out of school. So then I got a third one, and they said, "You better go." He said, "If you throw that one away, they'll come after you and put you in prison." So I grabbed my buddy, and we went down and signed up. It was just before Christmas, and I was in the Navy 2 weeks before Christmas. My drinking really started in the Navy. I drank a couple of times while I was in high school. But my drinking was really alcoholic from the beginning. When I got out of boot camp and I got, I went home on leave and I just drank. When I got transferred to Hawaii, I drank all the time. I was at a shore station at Barbers Point Naval Air Station. And I got with the crowd, and they made us, bear with me. They put me scrubbing pots and pans for 6 months, for 5.5 months. And they hurried us through boot camp, and I thought it was because of the war. That's why they drafted us, and I thought, that we're going to be going off. And I was happy to be in Hawaii, don't get me wrong. But they put me in there with all these guys, and they're just humming along. And I want to get the hell out of there and get things done so I can go drink. And that's the way it was. That was just when I was just starting drinking. And I used to get in trouble because I'd holler at people, "Why aren't you doing this and do that?" I wanted to get out of there. So anyway, they put me on, they transferred me to Port and Starboard Liberty, and I got on that, and I only worked every other night. And then I got with these guys, and we just take off and party every day. And this guy, we bought an old car from this guy who was an officer who was getting transferred the next day. And we bought his car, and it still had the officer sticker on it. And we'd get off, and we'd drive that bar. We'd drive it all over the island, and we'd get beer and wine, and we'd just throw all the empties in the back. And we'd just drive in, and those Marines, they just salute us as we're coming in. And we thought it was pretty funny. And then one day, my buddy was passed out in the back, and they seen all those empty beer cans, and so they pulled us over and stopped us. And they found out we ain't no officer. So they put us over in the brig, and So then they finally decided, well, you know, it's not our fault. It was the officer's fault for not taking the sticker off the car. So we got out of that one. But, you know, a lot of things happened to me in the Navy. And that's where, like I said, I was alcoholic from the beginning. I went to town, and I came back home, and I got back onto the ship, and I come up there, and I'm saluting the officer of the day. And I take off on my merry way towards where I sleep. He said, where the hell are you going? Or, no, he didn't say that. He said, where are you going, sailor? I said, I'm going to bed. He said, and I was drunk, and he says, well, where are you going? First of all, I ignored him, and I finally said, well, I'm going to bed. And he says, well, what ship are you on? I said, the USS Maury, the AGS 16. I thought he was trying to pull my leg. He said, well, that ship's on the other side over there. I was on the wrong ship. So, but that's just one of many stories. But, you know, when I share, I just hope that some of you people will just get a little bit of hope, because I never had any hope when I got here. You know, I was 20 years old when I came to these programs the first time. You know, and when I was overseas, a lot of things happened to me. And, you know, one time I, for instance, we would go to Vietnam. We were in Vietnam for several months, and we'd go back and forth to the Philippines to get supplies. And one time we came back, and the guy who slept next to me would never came back to the ship. And he was absent without leave for 3 days, and our ship was leaving. And we started pulling away. And as we're pulling away from the pier, all these cars come speeding up to the end, and they use the bullhorn to holler at us to come back. Well, the guy who slept next to me, they found his body in a ditch. They cut his, you know, slit his belly open. And the only reason I mention that is they wanted me to go identify his body, and I didn't want to, but he was a black guy, and all his buddies decided they wanted to go. And the reason I mention that is because we left and went back to Vietnam, and when we came back to port the next time, all I did when we was in Hong Kong or Japan or anywhere we went, or the Philippines, to go to the bar, all we did was drink, me and my buddies. And so we decided we're going to do something different. We're going to go on a tour, one of those tours, and go to Manila. So we took our paycheck over, got it cashed and changed into pesos. And so when we were coming back, one of the ladies there captured me, so I got separated from my buddies. So when I go back to my, when I'm going back to my ship, I'm by myself, and I got on this GP, just me and the driver, and we took off, and these two guys jumped on in behind me, and we're going, and they told us when we first got there, always take the main road if you're by yourself. It's all right to take the shortcut if you've got your buddies with you. And he took off down the shortcut, and I said, no, go on the main road. He kept saying, no, I said. And so finally, we just did about a block in, and I felt this knife up against my throat. And this guy behind me had me, and, you know, he told the driver to reach over and get my wallet. And naturally, your instinct is to fight, and I kicked him in the head. And then all of a sudden, I felt that knife up against my throat. And then I just snapped, and I remembered what happened to the guy who slept next to me. They found his body. And, you know, right then I froze. I just knew I was dead. I really thought I was dead. And it just threw me out and threw my wallet out there with that. And they got my money, but I was alive. But, you know, that's just one of many instances. My drinking took me so many places that it... And I want to get to this part here. You know, when all I did was drink whenever I could. And so by the time I got transferred back to California, and I was going to nav school, and a lot of things happened in between there. I got to where I met these guys that was drinking. We didn't make very much money then. So we would go down and we would sell blood in San Diego at different places to get money to drink on, to buy wine or whatever. And then I ended up living with some winos. I'm still in the Navy, and they were trying to send me back to Vietnam, and I said, you can't do that. I did two campaigns over there, and they were going to send me back for shore duty, and I said, you just can't do that. It's not right. And so I ran away, and so when I run away, I live with the winos because I didn't know what else to do. And, you know, I turned myself in because I didn't want to be called a deserter. And they put me in this jail cell, and I went into the DTs for the first time. And I was 20 years old. And that was my first trip into recovery. And, you know, I wasn't legal age to drink yet. And I thought, I'm too young to be an alcoholic. And, you know, they put me in this place, and this guy who was running this place in Long Beach, actually, I was in intensive care. They put me in this little glass cage because I was shaking so much, and they had all these tubes going in me that they kept pulling out. They thought I would bleed to death for whatever reason. And I spent 10 days in there. So then I got out of there, and I'm in this place, and this recovery place in Long Beach at the Naval Station. And the chief put you on the honor system. And but if he caught you drinking, and most of the people there had been caught drinking, he had them all on antabuse. So I was going over to the bowling alley because I couldn't leave the base. I'm restricted, so I'm drinking over there. And he didn't know I was, I didn't think. But somehow he found out, and he put me on antabuse. And he had 5 years in the program of AA already. And so he'd put you on that edge, he'd make sure you swallow it. He'd make sure. He'd look in your mouth. And, you know, it's just like taking an aspirin. I thought, you know, there's nothing to it. I take it and I forget I ever had it. And we stole some Liberty cards. And we went downtown, and I'm sitting in this bar, and I'm drinking this beer out of, just draft beer. And the bartender said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "It's just warm in here." He said, "Well, your face is getting red." And I said, "Just give me another beer." He said, "Look, give me another beer," and I drank it. And he says, "Are you sure you're all right? Your face is as red as that light bulb." And I said, "It's just hot in here. Give me another beer." So he gave me another beer, I've heard of people drinking online abuse, but it sure as hell wasn't me, because at that third beer, and it's one of those damn long bars where the bathroom's way in the back, and I'm walking there and I'm holding onto my chest because I know my heart's coming through it. And that's a true story. I really thought my heart was coming through my chest. And I'm trying to hold it in, and I'm trying to get back to the bathroom because I'm going to get sick. And, you know, 3 weeks later, my buddy said, let's go to North Hollywood. They got this strip club there, and we can drink. And I said, you're on antabuse. I said, you ended up in the hospital when you drank on it. He says, yeah. He said, if you just drink it and sip it, you'll be immune to it. It didn't work. But, you know, those are kind of funny stories, but you know the truth of it is I did quit drinking after that, and I had these people taking me to AA meetings that was more loving than any people I've ever known. And these people were taking me, and then they introduced me to this young guy that was like 24 years old, and I was 20. And he started taking me to North Hollywood, and he took me to Burbank and these different meetings. And I really got to where I liked the people. I liked what I was seeing. And I wished that, and at that time, I really did. I wish I could have that and drink too. Because I knew I was going to drink. Because everybody in my family drank, and I wanted to see what was going on at home when I got out of the service. But you know, I couldn't do that. And you know, when I got home, I was in jail 3 times in 2 weeks for being drunk. And the second time, the judge said, "You were just," and it was just for public intoxication. It wasn't for doing anything. And he said, "Weren't you just here?" And I said, "Yes." And he says, "Well, if you're here again in 6 months, within 6 months, you're going to do 6 months at the state farm," which is, that's the state prison in Indiana. And that same week, I'm back in jail again, and it's a holiday weekend, and I'm standing and sitting in there, and all these guys are making fun of me because I'm going to go to prison for 6 months. And I didn't see anything funny about it at all. And I'm scared, and I got up there, and I walked into the courtroom, and the judge, it was a different judge. He said, "I don't find any paperwork here. Have you ever been here before?" I said, "No, sir, Your Honor." So I just got $1 in court costs. So I moved to another town, and me and my uncle was drinking, and I woke up, and I was blacked out, and all I seen was those bars. And I didn't even know I was in jail. I didn't know how I got in jail, you know. And so I went into recovery. My aunt told me about a VA hospital. And this is where I really took serious to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm in there for 2 weeks, and they said, "I don't like your attitude, and you better change, blah, blah, blah." And my aunt convinced me that it'll look good when I go up to see the judge if I'm in this program. And so I started looking at it differently. And, you know, I got, you know, we had people coming in from the regular AA group from town would come in twice a week to bring us an AA meeting. And I started getting a little bit of hope from those people. I'm 23 years old, and, you know, I left there and I went into a halfway house. And I got involved in Alcoholics Anonymous with a couple of other guys, and we just went all over town just doing coffee and setting up and whatever we could do to stay involved. And they ended up getting married after 6 months and going back out, but I stayed in the program. And, you know, I thought I would never drink again at that time. I was doing what they told me to do, and things were going okay for me. But, you know, that's another thing that I'll get to later. It's important that my sobriety be first in my life today, because that's where I made my first mistake. Everything was going fine. I was doing what I was told, and like I said, I thought I'd never drink again. And then I got involved with a woman who wasn't in the program, and she used to complain because I was never home. And she said, what's the use of whether you're sober or not? You're never home anyway. So I started eliminating the things I was doing. My commitments I stopped doing. The meetings I was going to I stopped. Pretty soon I'm not doing anything. And I convinced myself that, you know, I pray every morning. I read my 24-hour book. I do all these things. I'll be all right. But you know, when I quit going to the meetings and I quit being around you people, I stopped doing those things too. And I was just me. And I was lost again. And when we broke up and things didn't go right, I had no acceptance. I had no support because I quit going to the people who was helping me. And so, you know, and the moral of the story is, you know, I've been in AA for 2.5 years, man. And I talked to God that night, and I told him, I said, I know I'm an alcoholic, but I can't live like this. You know, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't eat, and my whole I was so full of self-pity that it just was killing me. And I said, I got a drink. And I didn't want people that was trying to help me to see me drink, so I waited. I drove across the state line into Missouri, and I waited till I found a motel that was close to a bar so I wouldn't have to drive. And I did. And after I had a few drinks, that bar wasn't good enough. And they said, where's the next bar? And they said, up there. I drove up in the hills, and they were trying to kill each other up there. And I'm not that kind of a guy. I don't like to fight. So I decided this isn't where I need to be. So I tried to go back down the hill, and I drove my car right off the Ozark Mountains. And a tree trunk stopped me from going all the way down. Yeah, you know, I'm touching a lot on this here drunkalogue, and I'm going to get off of it here in a minute. But, you know, I'm just trying to let people know that if I would have listened the first time, you know, things would have been different. But I didn't. I have to learn things the hard way. You know, I heard after that happened, I drank for another 11 months, and I'm in the hospital in Portland, Oregon. They thought I was jaundiced. They did a liver biopsy on me. I did 4 weeks in the hospital there. I had two doctors there. One pretty little doctor, and she was telling me, why don't you smoke pot? It's better for you. The booze is killing you. And then this other doctor came in, and he wasn't as pretty, and he told me the same thing, that the booze was killing me. Why don't I smoke pot? I told him pot makes me go to sleep. I like booze, you know. So, you know, I was back in, I went to another VA hospital in American Lake for alcoholism for treatment. And that, I counted them up. I've been 4 times in Fort Miley in San Francisco to VA hospital for treatment. Once in Indiana, once in Prescott, Arizona, American Lake in Washington. So many veterans hospitals and other hospitals. I was in the hospital for acute pancreatitis and all these things, you know. And, you know, the moral of the story is when I come into the rooms this time, I got a little bit of hope. And it wasn't easy because I was hopeless. I never thought I would be sober again. And a lot of things happened. A lot of things happened that makes me think that God brought me back into these rooms. And I know that it's these rooms that keep me close to my God. I know a lot of people don't like to hear that, but I'm only speaking from my own experience. You know, because when I got sober this time, you know, so many things had happened to me in my drinking, and I just had no hope. They just read about that pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization, and that's the life I lived for so many years. My last few years, I lived in San Francisco, and I knew three or four bars. And I could go there, and I could sit there, and people would buy me drinks. Or I'd do errands for the bartenders and go get their drugs. Never once thinking how much trouble I could get into if I got caught. Never thought, I only thought about the booze I was going to get. And I'd sit there in that bar still in the mornings, and I'd see people with their briefcase going down to get on the train to go to work. And I wish it was me. I wish it could be me. But it couldn't, you know. I had to, and I tried to quit, you know, I tried to just get a couple of drinks in me so I'd stop shaking enough so I could go fill out an application. But after a couple of drinks, I don't want to do nothing else. So then I tried to go before I had any drinks, and I shook too much to write. And it was just a demoralization, just a hell of a way to live. And at any rate, you know, I found some hope in these rooms. I was in my room, and I tried to quit drinking a couple of times and without coming here. And I would try to drink water, or because I knew I was dehydrated, and I couldn't get the water to my mouth. I couldn't drink it. And so the next time I decided that I was going to try, and I made sure I had a straw so that I could drink, so I could get some liquid inside of me, because I didn't want to drink. And I shook so much I couldn't pour the booze inside of the glass. And you know, it got to where I was holding onto the wall to get to the bathroom. And anyway, I know a lot of you've heard this story before, but I looked in that mirror and it just looked like death warmed over. I really did. And I just told God, I just looked there and my eyes were back in my socket and my face was gray. And I said, God, is this how I'm going to die too? And all of my enablers were dying, and they were younger than me from this disease. And I used to think, what am I going to do now that they're all gone? Who's going to take care of me? And so at any rate, I got on my knees and I asked God for help, and that's all I did. And then I got back into bed. And I don't know, like I said, that's all I did. And a little while later, I don't know when, the guy who owns the bar where all my enablers were, he said, how are you doing? I told him, okay. And he says, get yourself together. I'm taking you to the hospital. And so, you know, he was going to take me to the hospital. He said, I don't want you to die like our friends. And it's amazing because I said, okay. But, you know, he didn't show up when I thought he should anyway. And I'm laying there, and I really need a drink back. And I'm going to go get one. And I thought, well, I'll call him first to see what happened. And I called the bar, and he said, I got busy here. This place is packed. But he said, I'll be right there. Just hang loose. And I got there, and I was going through the DTs and didn't even know it. And he didn't even smoke. And he tried to help. I tried to get a cigarette to my mouth, and I couldn't do it. So he lit it and put it in my mouth. And he took me to the hospital, and I was, you know, that was in the emergency room, and I was going through the DTs again, just like I did the first time I ended up in these rooms. So that was that's how I got back into the rooms this time. And you know, I had just been in that hospital 9 months before that. And you know, I was in there, and they told me that in January of 93, and they told me, you know, to go to outpatient, to do this, and go to a halfway house, and I should do this. And I said, I don't have to do any of that. All I have to do is go to AA, because I've been sober in AA before. And I know it works. So when I walked out of the hospital, I thought, well, I don't know anybody in AA, so I'll just go back to the bar where my friends are, and I'll just drink juice or something. Well, that lasted for about 3 days. And that's why I said that within that period of time, I was back in the hospital with the DTs. And So I got in, and this time I did what they told me. I got into outpatient. I was going to a lot of meetings. I just was willing, I guess. I think when I got on my knees in that hotel room, I surrendered. And that was in September of 1993 in San Francisco, and I haven't had a drink since. And I just started doing what was supposed to be doing. I was in that halfway house, for about 30 days, and they let me out to go, and I went to the Alano Club, and somebody gave me a big book. And the program's in the first 164 pages, but I started reading the stories in the back, and I'd been sober before, and I got a little bit of hope from reading that, you know, and they just gave me enough to keep me into these rooms, and I started hearing people talk, you know, and you know, I had that open mind, and I would listen. And you know, sometimes I'd think, oh, that's crazy or that's stupid or this or that, but I left my mind open, you know, and I tried some of these things, and you know, like I said, it just took a little bit of hope. I mean, I had a little crack there of hope that kept me going, and slowly but surely that grew, and I got that hope that things would get better. And you know, people would in the rooms would be talking about honesty and open-mindedness and willingness, and I'd be sitting in there, and I'd just be happy to be there. I'd just be happy to have a chance again, because so many people were always there complaining about this or about that, and I thought, well, maybe things would get better for me, and they did. You know, I like to tell people I my life's like a fairy tale. I've been close to death many times in my drinking. But you know, since I got sober this time, so many things have happened to me. Good things. And it's not all good. I mean, I've had bad things happen to me. When I was sober about a year and a half, you know, I'm not proud of this, but I was picking up cigarette butts off the streets when I got sober because I was too damn proud to ask somebody for a cigarette, you know? And you know, then I ended up on welfare, and then I, you know, slowly but surely things started changing, and I got a settlement from the government. Anyway, let me back up for a minute. When I was in that halfway house, I got screwed over there, and I didn't think they was doing me right. And I made myself a commitment that I was going to stay there the whole 6 months. But something happened, and I said, I can't do this. And they were going to move me to another building, another house, and I had so much fear. That's what I didn't talk about. So much fear, and I didn't know how to be around people when I was sober. And I didn't want to have to try and get to know more people all over again. I was just getting comfortable with the people I was with, and I didn't think it was fair. So I told the couple of the guys there I'm leaving, and I only had a pack of cigarettes and a candy bar, I think, and $2 to my name. And I'm out by the oceans where the halfway house was, and I went over to get on that train. They told me this one day. And so the next day I'm walking, it was kind of rainy out, and I'm walking through Golden Gate Park to get to the VA hospital for my outpatient program. And I'm praying, because they're telling me I got to move, and I just didn't want to do this. And I'm asking God for help, and I'm telling God, I said, I believe. And then I said, I think I believe. And then I'm telling myself, well, if I think I believe, I don't believe. But then I said, I'm willing to believe. And all these things are going through my mind, and like I said, it's rainy, drizzly out, but I didn't want to take the bus. And I get to the other side of the tree, the forest, and I could see a little light coming through the trees. And when I get past the trees, I looked up and I seen a rainbow. And when I seen that rainbow, I just knew it was okay. I got a warm feeling inside that told me it was going to be okay. And you know, it has been since then. But when that day came, the following week that I really had to leave, that fear hit me again. And I went down to get on that train. And I'm just holding on to the bars in the front of me, and I'm praying to God, and I tell God, you know, if I have to be homeless again, the only way I know how to survive is to drink, and I don't want to do that. And you know, I went back to the bar where this guy was who took me to the hospital, and he said, I can't do anything for you. But somebody else had a room, and he said, you can sleep on my floor tonight. So the next day I went back, I ended up going over to the hotel where I used to work. And I'd given up my place just 3 weeks before I got before I walked out of that place. And the guy who was running the place, he said, I'll give you a room in one of these out-of-order places we can't rent anyway. And you can stay there temporarily. And I ended up going to work there for one day a week just to pay for my rent. At any rate, things went along, and I, like I said, I was on welfare for a while, and then I got a settlement from the government. And this is where I'm telling you, not everything was perfect for me. I took off, and I went on a trip, actually. I went to Hawaii. But he said, don't take all of your money, leave it here in this lockbox, I forget what you call it, but in a safe deposit box. Nobody can get to it but me or the owner. And I said, okay, that way you won't be broke when you come home. And when I come home, it was all gone. He took it. And you know what? I had no trust for anybody when I come into these rooms, not even people in AA. I didn't trust nobody. But I trusted him because he kept me from being on the streets. He kept me from, and so many times he got my job back for me. I was fired 9 times in 4 years, and he kept me from being on the streets. And he did that to me, and it hurt. You know, I was mad, but then it hurt, you know, because I had trusted him. And so, you know, because of these rooms and because I listened to people in these rooms while I was here, like I said, I'd been sober about a year and a half or 2 years. And I seen this guy in the rooms, and I was there at 9 o'clock in the morning. I said, would you go have coffee with me? And in the meantime, I did a little mini inventory at home before then. And I did that little mini inventory, and then I talked to God. And then I went and had coffee with this guy, and I talked to him. And that helped me get through these things. You know, I mentioned it to a couple other people, and they said, well, did you break his leg? Did you do this? But you see, that's not what I needed to hear. So I talked to somebody. It's just like God's been watching over me since I've been here. And I've got a host of wonderful friends here. I mean, I have the A-teams here, and I, you know, some of them's wearing Hawaiian shirts because I happen to love Hawaii, and I go to the convention there. I try to go there every year, and it's just one of the blessings of this program. You know, like I said, it's not all good and it's not all bad, but I just go with the flow and let things happen. I like I said, I had a lot of fear. I had so damn much fear that I kept depending on this guy who was taking me to meetings all the time in San Francisco, and all these things was going on, and I talked to him a lot. And he just got mad one time. He just looked at me and he yelled in my face. He said, you want me to be your sponsor? And I said, yes. I just didn't know how to ask you. You know? So he's still my sponsor today. But when I moved down here, I needed a sponsor too. So I've got Ivan for a sponsor. And some of you know he died three days before my AA birthday last year. And he was a wonderful man. But you know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wouldn't have a life if it weren't for you guys today. I'll tell you a funny story that hurt like hell. And I had been sober for 10 years at this time, and I got cut with a knife, and it was in Hawaii. And I used to secretary this meeting down at Iroquois Point. It was a step study meeting, and we're setting up, and I was talking to this guy, and he was talking about the fourth step, and I said, I kept putting it off because I kept saying, well, you know, I've been sober, I mean, I've been in these rooms so many times that I've taken a lot of fourth steps. I don't have to hurry around. I didn't have to hurry to do it. And, I mean, I had already did it this time. I mean, but I took my time doing it. I said, and this lady had 27 years just looking at me and said, you were just scared. It was just fear. But she said it in a kind of a cold way, and it just hurt, you know. But she was right. I had to get honest with myself. It wasn't because I did it so many times. It's because of fear. I had been drinking so many times for so many years between that last four step and this one. I had a lot to put down. So, you know, I Bill took me through the steps, and he used to take me to these step study meetings. I mean, not the step study meetings. Well, I went to them anyway. He'd take me to these four-step meetings at this club in San Francisco, and workshops, what it was. And finally, I got it done. And I was so, but you know, we did all the steps together. And then I moved down here, and I had to start all over trying to meet people and make new friends. And then I moved to Hawaii, and I made a lot of friends over there. And you know, I knew I was going to be nervous up here today. And I told my friend Wilma, who just had 41 years this month, I said I was going to be here. And she said to just take a deep breath and just speak from your heart and be honest, and everything will be all right. And I said, and I believe her. You know, and they took me under their wing over there, and they made me feel at home, just like you guys do here now. But if I got anything to say to any of you guys, if you listen to the stories in these rooms and any of them like mine, say, well, I used to hear these stories when I got sober before, and I used to think, if that ever happened to me, I'd quit too. But you know what? Those yes happened to me. I don't know if they happened to you, but I had a lot of yes that happened, and they weren't very much fun. And it never, ever got better for me. It always got worse. And I don't know that I'm supposed to wrap it up here, but I have so much gratitude for Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's just given my life back to me. I actually never had a life. I never knew how to live. The way I was raised was no way to live. I didn't know how to live. I had to learn all these things in these rooms. And like I said, I've been in and out of these rooms many times. And I'm just grateful to be here today. And I remember things that my old sponsor used to say. One used to tell me all the time, he used to say, I never seen a grateful alcoholic get drunk. And I try to keep gratitude in my heart. And I try to stay in service to show my gratitude to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I guess he told me I have to stop. So I love you all for being here, and thanks for being here for me.